You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Let him go. He's saying, get out of the way. I want to play some rugby.
The Playbook, 95BFM sports podcast. Nothing but sports, sports, and more sports.
Get it, pitch him. Right, yes, he's running, he's clear. He's saying, look at me.
Buenos dias.
Oh, God, I tried to be bilingual, but I can't think of a single...
Bonjour.
Yeah, that's probably where I was going to go.
Aloha. At.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Welcome to the Playbook. we're back for another week. Look, last week's one was good, man.
It was good. We sounded very professional, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Proud of us.
I'm so proud. That really surprised me. I'd expect to sound that professional.
Yeah.
Usually we're just all over the place.
Yeah, usually there's no rhyme or reason to what we're saying, but we had a decent amount of structure. Good on us.
We're back again this week to chat about a lot of things that have been happening in the realm of throwing balls and jumping over things.
And getting punched in the face.
Yeah, that's oddly specific, but yes, yeah. We will be talking about that today. As per usual, the Playbook is 95BFM's dedicated sports sort of podcast.
So if you go to 95bfm.com/bcast, that's where all the stations bcast live. The Playbook is actually right at the top of the search list. So right there, right convenient, click on it and you'll get all the Playbook your little heart will desire.
But yes, we have a lot to talk about, so cannot waste any more time.
The Playbook.
I'm missing fucking Emmerdale for this.
Now, let's start with that punching people in the face idea that I mentioned earlier. Spence v. Crawford, you are quite the fighting fan. You would have been all over this. What can you tell us about this?
I should preface by saying it was a big week for combat sports. We had Naoya Inoue versus Stephen Fulton, which happened, I think, on Wednesday. We had the UFC on Sunday, and then we also had Terence Crawford versus Errol Spence on Sunday as well. This is huge.
It sounds huge. Just by the amount of pay-per-views, got 650,000 pay-per-views. They both got $25 million each just from the broadcasting. That is bloody ridiculous.
Yeah, to go into all the punch, face, kick stuff that's happened throughout the week would be here all day.
Absolutely.
So for this episode, I'd love to focus on Errol Spence versus Terence Crawford. This was an interesting one. I can just think back to when I was with Rob and Anika doing this show with them last year, and I was telling them, oh, this is the biggest fight of the decade.
Everyone wanted to see Errol Spence and Terence Crawford fight.
So it's the biggest fight of last decade.
Did you? Not everybody, come on.
Well, biggest fight of this decade.
Not everybody was kung fu fighting either.
It was huge, and I didn't think it would ever happen. Why is it the biggest fight of the last decade? Because Spence and Crawford, the two best at their craft. This fight was monumental, especially in an era where the fights that boxing fans wanted to see happen weren't happening.
Did it live up to expectations, do you think?
I think it did more than that. I think a fight of this magnitude would attract a lot of hype. The pay-per-view buys were high. Not the highest we've ever seen compared to some
we've
of
seen higher.
Well, compared to some of these big gates that we've seen Mayweather do. Now, the significance also lies within the belts. Just for some historical context, we're in the four belt era.
So what are the four belts?
We have the WBA, WBC, the IBF, and the WBO. There were many undisputed champions before the number of major sanctioning bodies increased to four in 2007, but there have only been 13 boxers to hold all four titles simultaneously. I'm not going to pretend like I can break down and give you an analysis of what happened in that fight. That fight was so special. A lot of people thought it was going to be close when you have two talented fighters such as Errol Spence and Terence Crawford. Their primes, top of their game, they're the best in the world at what they do.
But the fight was quite one-sided, it seems.
It was quite one-sided.
Very surprising. I do have some numbers here. That Crawford landed over 50% of his shots. Spence only connected 20%. That's mega. That is mega. No wonder he looked the way he did at the end of that fight. He was a swollen guy.
Crawford's performance was a masterclass, and what shocked so many people, and it was beautiful to watch, regardless of how brutal it was, Crawford was so smooth. He just looked one step ahead of Crawford the entire fight. His technical understanding of the sport and how complete he is as a fighter is crazy. He's in another dimension to the counterparts in his division. To see that sort of fight is crazy to me. This was being compared to Marvin Hagler versus Tommy Hearns.
It's history.
It was living up to that expectation, and for Crawford to go out and perform like he did cements him as a great. To be honest, he got the respect he deserved all along.
Well, because I'm not going to lie, I hadn't heard of him before this. I'd heard of Errol Spence, but I'd never heard of Terence Crawford, and bloody hell, what a fighter he is. He deserves a bit more respect on his name.
He does. I'm glad I was there to witness that. Felt like everyone that watched that fight was a part of history. I do feel for Errol. Some people were saying he looked a bit off, that he was drained from the weight cut. Errol said that he is not going to make excuses, and that's the mark of a true fighter. Fighters lose, and yeah. I'm sick of this whole rhetoric of the whole someone's O has to go, that Mayweather's era popularized, and that definitely led to boxers having padded records and not fighting the best and, you know, avoiding unification belts. It was bad for the sport, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you think they will rematch? I've seen that Spence has said that he's keen. Yeah, what would be the motivations for doing a rematch for someone like Spence aside from the bags?
I'm not sure. You have competitive guys such as Spence. You're going to want that rematch. You're going to want to prove yourself. Because I'm sure he most definitely was not satisfied with how he performed.
And it was in the contract that there would be two fights.
A rematch, yeah. Look, Spence has been through a lot in the last few years.
Yeah, I did some reading. A car crash, something happened with his eye, I also saw.
Yeah, not too long ago he did crash his Ferrari. He was launched from his car, made a return, and he looked great on his return, but you can't help but think about that car accident.
There will be some lingering issues from that car accident that may not be so obvious right away.
Yeah. Also, Crawford actually got shot in the head not too long ago as well.
Jeez Louise.
And he survived. So these guys have been through a lot. They're top of their crafts.
Wounded warriors.
So they really do deserve the top level of respect, especially for the level that they're competing at.
For sure.
The Playbook with Joe and Amelia.
What's on the agenda for you?
I am going to do a little motorsport roundup. I'm going to start with the Formula One, of course. We had the Belgian Grand Prix, as I spoke about last show. It was a bit doom and gloom the last show when I was talking about Belgium. I was talking about, oh, death, oh, crashes. But the race, I will say, was one of the better Formula One races I've watched recently, of course helped by the fact that Max Verstappen had to take an engine penalty and he started P5. I did predict that he would get to first place by the end of lap 2. Formula One, we were fans, we were also spoiled. He didn't get to P1 until lap 17. So we at least got the hope of thinking maybe Max won't win this race. Yeah, it is Belgium. I think in the last few years we haven't had the most amazing races there, so I don't have a lot to talk about in terms of racing, but I will talk about Yuki Tsunoda, an honourable mention. He is now teammates with Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel Ricciardo, who has just been shipped in to replace the outgoing Nyck de Vries. Nyck de Vries was found to be not good enough.
Did he retire?
No. He got the boot from McLaren last year. He was just not living up to the expectations that you would expect from an 8-time race winner. Yeah, it was really kind of hard to see, but he has been given some sort of redemption arc at AlphaTauri. But I wanted to talk about Yuki Tsunoda, because Yuki Tsunoda got P10, which doesn't sound that great, but the AlphaTauri is a bit of a dog of a car. When you compare the fact that this is Yuki's, oh, I want to say it's his third year, he is just some little fella from Japan. He's an absolute sweetheart.
He's a darling.
He is so sweet. He's so kind. And he's a bit of a gremlin on track. I won't lie. Definitely how you'd expect a Japanese driver to be. They are pretty, pretty aggro. But he's really good at what he does. Daniel Ricciardo, on the other hand, finished P16. And I will, extend a bit of grace. It's Daniel Ricciardo's second race back this year.
Okay.
But 16th is not great, considering the idea around AlphaTauri at the moment is that they are the second team to Red Bull. Max Verstappen's teammate in Red Bull, Sergio Perez, who I'll probably just refer to as Checo from now on, he isn't really living up to expectations. So the discussion has been, who is going to replace Checo in 2025? And they're saying, is it going to be Yuki? Is it going to be Daniel? Or is it going to be Liam Lawson? I hope so. Watch the space.
Kiwi boy.
That would be very nice to see. Daniel's performance wasn't mind-blowing. He does have a lot to prove, and I can imagine it wouldn't be too fun for him, because he left Formula One because he couldn't get a good seat. He could have gone to Haas, he could have gone to Williams, that kind of shitbox. He wanted to go to a good team, but everyone was like, well, mate, you haven't been good enough. You're going to have to just take what you can get or go without. And he was like, okay, I'll go without. And then he got offered AlphaTauri, real also shitbox car. And I think he saw that as his only way to get back into a sport that he has been really successful in. And it's really been a shame to see the kind of trajectory that he's been on. But if I'm going to have faith in Daniel, and I think he's going to do well. But yeah, he's got a lot to prove against Yuki. I also wanted to talk about the Formula E, because season's over. Unfortunately, it was grabbed up by Jake Dennis and his Avalanche Andretti. But P2 overall in the season was taken by Nick Cassidy, a New Zealander. And P3 was Mitch Evans, also a Kiwi, St. Kent's boy. So
shout out to you know who, the
lads.
Kent's boys that we know.
That was really exciting to see. And I know people have their opinions on Formula E. It's just, you know, if you don't make it in F1, you go to Formula E, and it's just boring electric cars that sound like vacuum cleaners. And I mean, that part's true. But the new Generation 3 cars have been really bloody fast. And so it's been really good to see the Kiwi boys getting out there and getting amongst it.
We have heaps of Kiwi boys in Formula E, eh?
Yes, Kiwi and people. We also do have in Indy as well. So I think we're really doing bits on the international stage. And a bit closer to home, I've actually done a little write-up for this. And the first line is, I want to have a brief discussion about the Australian supercars, followed by a massive wall of text that is not brief in the slightest. And I just need to give some context about the supercars. You know, some of you might be vaguely familiar with it. It was, you know, Ford versus Holden, the Ford Falcon versus the Holden Commodore. This was so exciting in Australia because those are two Australian-built cars. The car market in Australia has kind of flopped. They can't afford to make cars in Australia now. Falcon's goners, the Commodore's goners, and so they had to bring in the Ford Mustang and the GM Chevy Camaro, which are two American makes. And the issue this year has been parity issues, because the thing about the supercars, it's a spec series. Everyone gets the same car. The only difference between cars is the money that the team has, the intelligence of the engineers, what the engineers and strategists can bring to the team. And so a big part of the appeal of the supercars is that the cars are the same, everyone can fight it out with everyone. But the new Ford Mustangs have really not been good at all. And random thing, I didn't find out the reason for this, they've also been spontaneously combusting while people are driving. They just catch on fire, massive, massive smoke. I think we've seen it twice this year, and which is very concerning. And then while all this is happening with the Ford Mustang really not reaching its potential, we heard the other day that Ford has actually withdrawn their sponsorships from the supercars, and they also used to run the safety car. They've pulled that as well. And that really makes me worry for the future of the supercars. That's Ford. They've been with the series for so long, and they don't seem too keen on the trajectory that it's been on at the moment. It's a big worry.
Ford has been there since the start.
They are classic Aussie. I mean, the Ford Falcon is so Aussie. And then they replaced it incredibly with an American make. And I feel like it's kind of lost its soul a bit. I mean, it's not over. It's not dead. But I think a lot of changes need to be made. And I do have, this is what my actually biggest wall of text in my notes is. Shane Van Gisbergen. I am going to put it out into the world that I think the loss of Shane Van Gisbergen, who has announced that he's leaving the supercars, probably going to NASCAR,
okay,
that with him leaving, the supercars is going to be in a real tough spot. Because we saw when Scott McLaughlin left, Kiwi boy as well, when he left in 2020, I think, there was a big void left, and it got to a point where Shane Van Gisbergen no longer had anyone who was as great a driver as him to battle with, so it kind of became, oh, Shane Van Gisbergen, he can start 10th and he'll win anyway, we know how it's going to work.
Yeah.
But he also, surprisingly, he drives the Camaro. He has not been happy with it at all, and he's expressed how he's been trying his hardest to get the car to work, but it's not working. And I think that the decline in the supercars, alongside how he's not enjoying his car, and also the fact that he keeps getting in trouble with the stewards. He got a pretty, in my opinion, bogus penalty that took him off the podium on Saturday. I think he's just sick and tired of the supercars. It doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And it's really sad to see, because it is my favourite racing series. I think it's got the grimiest, the dirtiest, the best wheel-to-wheel racing in any racing series ever. But I don't know if it's managed well, and I don't know if it's appealing enough for drivers. Why would you want to go to the supercars when you could literally go anywhere else, get paid better, have a better car, and just enjoy racing more?
I feel like since the supercars went to their American builds, you've maybe lost a bit of your original fan base.
Yeah, because there was the thing was Ford versus Holden. People felt such a connection to these places that gave so much to Australia by having these factories there to build these cars. You know, it was part of the Australian culture. Like, Holden is obviously an Australian car brand, but Ford having their Australian line of cars, it, yeah, with the American makes, it's really just the soul has been maybe a bit tarnished. But it will be exciting to see Shane Van Gisbergen in NASCAR next year. However, this is a call out to all the broadcasters. I don't want to have to illegally watch NASCAR. Why do none of you have the broadcasting rights for it? Come on, guys, get behind it.
I can't believe Spark Sport or any of our sports broadcasters don't have the rights to NASCAR.
I know. I feel like Sky might have used to, but maybe there's just not enough interest in NASCAR. But with the Kiwi coming along, I'm sure someone's going to have to pick it up.
Well, Sky Sport or Spark Sport or
TV One
or, I don't know, Duke.
Somewhere. Anyone. Give us NASCAR.
The Playbook. A whole lot of sports stuff.
We're becoming more used to hearing and seeing te reo Māori in everyday use nowadays. Pacific languages have become increasingly familiar to many of us as well, which you can't help but feel good about. In the sporting realm, the prominence of Indigenous languages demonstrates a sense of cultural pride and raises awareness of their vulnerability. We've got Dion Inari, a lecturer in sport and recreation at Te Wānanga Aronui o Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland University of Technology, on the line for a kōrero, and I thought it would be important that we acknowledge just how Eurocentric our sporting arena actually is.
You know, we kind of have to take it back to the history once upon a time. So, you know, when I was a kid about 20 years ago, a lot of the Pacific athletes were discouraged from speaking their languages, both on the field and off the field. A lot of times, a lot of our Pacific athletes, you know, were somewhat told to leave their culture at the door in terms of their Pacific and their Samoan ways of doing things and their language. So we're seeing an increase now of different athletes, you know, even saying one or two words in our native languages in Samoan and in Tongan and in Te Reo Māori. And then we're also seeing an increase of our athletes saying full sentences as well. So yeah, it's an awesome movement that's occurring right now, and I fully support it.
On the topic of how common it's become, we're seeing more and more Māori and Pacifica athletes speak their native language in interviews. Even when the Black Ferns won the Rugby World Cup, Ruby Tui giving us that classic waiata, Tutira mai nā iwi, which made global headlines. And I'm sure there's probably heaps of other examples as well.
Yeah, you know, it's become more common with this big Indigenous movement that's coming along now. Now a lot of Māori and Samoan and Tongan more than ever are not only proud to be Māori and Samoan and Tongan, but are unapologetically Māori, Samoan and Tongan. And, you know, Ruby Tui singing Tutira Mai Nā Iwi is somewhat of a microcosm of the power of language and, you know, where we're positioned. Speaking English in sporting interviews does not differentiate New Zealand on the international stage. speaking Māori does. And, you know, and singing Māori songs like that really is what differentiates Aotearoa from the rest of the world. And that's, you know, what got such international clout. What she did there was amazing because she also gave permission for other Māori and Pacific athletes to let them know it's okay, and you should, when you're given these national and international platforms, disrupt them and use them as a space and a time to, you know, forthrightly bring all the glory and all the passion and the mana and the power of your culture and display it there. Yeah, no, I'm just here for all of it.
When we bring up that presence of Te Reo Māori and Pacific languages on television, I can't help but think about the job that commentary teams do. Obviously, the first example that would come to mind is with rugby games or NRL games. There is a consistent lack of effort that goes in terms of pronouncing names correctly. We've seen Māori television make effort to make Māori commentary for sporting events more available over the years. Do you think that going into the future, we'll see more effort being made?
Yeah, short answer, absolutely. They absolutely 100% should. I just want to make comment in relation to the commentators. It's very important to acknowledge that sport commentators that do not pronounce the names of the athlete correctly are incompetent in their job. As a sport commentator, it is your job to correctly pronounce the athlete's name. What I find particularly concerning as a researcher and as a Samoan chief is that there is a massive, you know, we have a massive overrepresentation of Māori and Pacific athletes are both in rugby union and rugby league, and we've had this percentage for over blimmin 20 years, and we're still seeing the incompetency with commentators not getting it right. So I must make that very clear that commentators that do not pronounce their athletes that they're commentating on names correctly are actually not fully doing their job. They're paid to acknowledge the athletes and to pronounce their names correctly. What is also of concern, particularly as, you know, I speak as a Samoan, is sometimes when they mispronounce the names of our athletes, sometimes they're actually inadvertently swearing in our language. So again, these names are not just individually connected to the athlete. Some of these names are actually chiefly titles that hold great mana, great prestige, and they actually belong to a collective. So when you're mispronouncing these chiefly names incorrectly, not only are you offending this athlete that carries the name, you're also offending all the people who have genealogical and chiefly connections to these names. These names belong to the collective. It's only certain, and the individuals are merely carriers of the name. So that's one point I want to make very clearly in terms of the severity of getting the names correct. The second part is, you know, upon getting the names correctly in commentary, once we get that, we actually have to move beyond that. You know, it's not enough for the overrepresentation of Māori and Pacific as athletes, and then the underrepresentation of Māori and Pacific in the non-playing roles, including commentary, as managers, and most importantly, in these sporting boards. The percentage of Māori and Pacific in the non-playing roles should be reflective of the sporting field. So, you know, yeah, it's one thing for the non-Māori and Pacific commentators to start getting our name right, but then we also need to push the dialogue further that there should actually be more Māori and Pacific commentators commentating on our athletes, full stop. So I totally, you know, support and I love the movement that Whakaata Māori are doing, the Māori television, in terms of providing that commentary in Te Reo Māori. But there's still a long way to go in terms of our languages and how our languages are used in the sporting arena and how we push that.
It's great to see such huge Māori presence with sporting events that come to our country. This is our identity. Do you think that this presence should only grow even more on the sports field, in the media, and so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only do we need to see more of that presence in terms of the media and at the sporting games, we also, again, more importantly, need to see that presence in the sporting boardroom. So we need to see them at the decision-making tables. You know, at a CEO and high management level, we need Māori and Pacific presence there. Yeah, we need it all around throughout the whole sporting canon. Yeah, right from the top of, you know, different sporting CEOs right to the athletes and
Playbook with your hosts. Wait, what are your names again?
Also, apologies, there's a DJ set going on in the background, so if you can hear some ns-ns and some doof-doof, there's a rave going on in Studio One.
Maybe just have a little dance-along, listeners.
While we talk about sport. Dance intermission.
Hell maybe? Yeah, everybody dance now.
All right, dance intermission. Now that that's over, I was really sad on Sunday.
Aw, Bo Surf.
Nah, look, man.
You've been back in our football ferns real hard. I can imagine this would have been pretty heartbreaking.
This is a big deal for us.
Mm.
I spoke to Holly Thorpe last week, and she put it into perspective of how big this was for us. And to beat Norway, former world champs, that's massive.
Mm.
That is an iconic sporting moment.
A big achievement in itself.
In this country?
Hell
oh my,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Absolutely. I mean, remember in the 2010 World Cup, how hype Kiwis got for the fact that the All Whites were unbeaten. Didn't win a game, but they were unbeaten.
Well,
that was massive. And so to see football ferns at home take some dubs against some big powerhouses, it was really quite amazing to see.
Well, I can't remember how many games we'd lost in a row before that, but it was like quite a few. Mm. We'd lost to Vietnam in a pre-game before the World Cup. So this was big for us. It felt big when we beat Norway, when we lost to the Philippines. It was a bit of a downer, but it was all right. We could still pick ourselves back up.
Mm.
Switzerland comes along and destroys our
dreams. Do you think we might have expected too much from the Ferns? Because New Zealand is not a footballing country. That's not our strength. Everyone was kind of saying, oh, they're going to be a home team that goes through, that's going to be great. But, you know, I think we should be very happy with the performance that they put on, you know?
Absolutely. Considering where we've come from, I feel like we should back our Ferns.
Yeah, and I reckon the things that this is going to do for women's football in Aotearoa, it's going to be generational with the impact that it has. I think we're going to see so many more young girls into footy now, and it's going to be an absolute treat to see.
Based on the kōrero I had with Holly, I just think we should continue the sport for women's football, women's sports in general, because I feel like there's going to be a portion of people that are like, well, they've had their moment now.
Yeah, let's move on.
Let's move
on. See them in another 4 years.
Yeah, no, we should continue to back them.
Keep hyping them up. Hell yeah.
And we should continue to give them coverage. We're not just here to tick a box. Mm. Yeah, more support for our football ferns, please, going into the future. Maybe some support for other women's teams. Maybe just some support for teams in general that don't get a lot of attention.
What about just support for women?
As well, please.
Go the girls.
Football, cricket, Quidditch. The playbook's got it.
This is still in the realm of women's sports, but I thought this was quite interesting, and I wanted to get your take on this, because this is worldwide controversy at the moment. At first, I think people kind of thought it was a bit funny.
Yeah, everyone had a bit of a giggle, but then you look deeper into it, and
it's a bit messed up. Yeah, so I'm sure a lot of people saw the headlines that this Somalian sprinter made. She took almost twice as long as the winner to finish the 100-meter sprint at the World University Games in China. Now, she didn't really look like she was qualified to be there.
No, that's an understatement.
No, she just, like, she didn't, all the other sprinters were like she was kind of looking over to see.
You get some tips, like, how do I stand on my marks,
and how do I
run?
I get, you know, I'm kind of like,
how doing, do I be fast?
I'm doing a jolt, you can't see it, I'm doing a jolting motion right now, like a bit of a zoom in to it. Yeah, she couldn't do any of that.
No, and what I found funny, before it got a bit, was just how she like kind of skipped across the finish line, like I would do after the hardest workout of my life, like, woo, geez, that was a big one, and she kind of just does a little skip across the line. But yeah, tell us what was kind of a bit down buzz about this.
So it turns out, after a deep investigation by the Somali Ministry of Youth and Sport, they revealed that she's not a runner, nor is she a sports person.
Colour me shocked.
I feel, yes, paint me in surprised I feel like you didn't really need to go into an in-depth investigation. Like, the investigation probably lasted,
like, really? She's not a runner? She's really? Not qualified?
No. technique was all wrong, unless it was, I don't know. The chairperson of the Somali Athletics Federation has been accused of abusing her power, defaming Somalia, and also a bit of nepotism as well.
Yes, classic. It's not good. So this runner was the niece of a high-ranking sports official?
I do believe so.
That,
yeah.
You know, it makes me think, what made her want to agree to do this? Because she would probably be aware that she is not a sprinter. Would it be for, you know, a cheeky little free holiday? Do you think there's more nefarious things going on? Or do you think it was just a bit of fuckery that they didn't have anyone to field? So they're like, yo, chuck my niece in, she's got two legs.
There's not enough details to really look into what actually happened.
Yeah, and I can imagine that with my, you know, knowledge of Somalia, that they probably won't be too transparent about what actually happened.
No, but this did not stop people from sending death threats and going into the whole argument of women don't belong in sports.
Yeah,
and
people will always disappoint you, won't they?
Yeah,
with their reactions to things.
That's where it gets a bit dark, and that's where it gets a bit disappointing.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal that warrants death threats and abuse and sexism. It's just, it was a bit funny to watch, and obviously it's probably disappointing for the capable runners in Somalia that they've kind of had this girl rock up and do an absolute shitter of a job. But don't send death threats. Come on, guys.
The person that is responsible does deserve to be punished for it. Like, you can't, that, I'm sure there was much more deserving woman that should have been in that spot. But like, death threats and quite literally going backwards is
no sport is that serious to warrant death threats.
No, it never is. It's running in a straight line for 100
meters.
Yeah,
like, come on, just go outside, have a deep breath. You'll get over it, mate.
And it's not the Olympics, it's the university.
It's the university
games as well.
Champion. Like, honestly, very, you know, inconsequential.
The playbook.
If that goes wrong,
yeah,
that could go really wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the playbook for, what's the date today?
It is Friday, the 4th of August. We're in Leo season.
We are in Leo season. Thanks to you for listening.
We appreciate the support.
Yeah.
You don't understand. We really appreciate you guys listening.
It's good to finally have this podcast up and running regularly.
Mm.
I just got to make sure I edit them more regularly.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see who else and what else we talk about on the show.
Hell yeah. That's what sports is fun for. You just never know what's going to happen.
Just check it out under Bcasts. If you want to listen to any past episodes, there's quite literally years worth of podcasts.
Mm.
And also go follow us on social media if you want to keep up.
What's the at, Joe?
95BFM underscore the playbook.
Get amongst it. Thank you for listening, guys. We really appreciate it.
That's
See you
us.
Next week.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/Bcasts.